Good morning and welcome to Shattering Myths. It's a program devoted to the largest segment of our society, to those of you like me who have come to know that there's something dreadfully wrong, especially troubling, about the religious and political institutions, the media reporting, and the military, even the economic schemes that are being credited as being part of the solution. We realize that these institutions actually cause the problems that we are enduring. So simply presenting the news as if we are reviewing how they're going to fix certain problems would be a complete waste of our time. Instead, we're going to determine who is manipulating the situation that we witness around the world, why they're doing it, what the consequence is of their actions, and then we're going to turn to God in our second hour, because his covenant is the only hope that we have to avoid the catastrophe that these human institutions are bringing upon the world. If you'd like to participate in this discussion of a lifetime, you're welcome to add to it, criticize it, try to present an alternative view, or share your insights in support of what God has to tell us about the evil nature of human institutions. Our number, toll-free, 877-300-7645. Yes, we heard today, and the headlines read, the U.S. government began a partial shutdown on Tuesday for the first time in 17 years, potentially putting up to 1 million workers on unpaid leave, closing national parks and stalling medical research projects. You know, the federal government does very few medical research projects. They basically send money off to universities, and that's where they're done, and mostly done by graduate students who are treated essentially like academic slaves. The most government employees are not effective workers. They're overpaid. They're underworked. The fact that we are shutting down much of government is also untrue. It's also untrue that the workers are on unpaid leave. The nature of politics today is when they return, they will be paid for work they did not do. The best thing that could happen to America is for the government to go away. Really, all aspects of government. At this point, it is counterproductive almost across the board. $3.8 trillion of a pyramid scheme that is harmful, even destructive. Federal agencies were directed to cut back services after lawmakers could not break a political stalemate. This article from Reuters reads, this sparks new questions about the ability of a deeply divided Congress to perform its most basic functions. So here the issue is Congress. Now, they passed many resolutions regarding the budget. It's just that the Senate overturned them. And the Senate overturned them because they were told to do so by America's de facto dictator, Obama. He was unwilling to negotiate. He has made that point perfectly clear, that this president does not believe in division of power. He has never negotiated with Congress, and he still isn't now. And if a Democrat steps outside of his dictate, then they have no chance for re-election. It's as simple as that. Republicans wanted to negotiate because we are a house of fire. We are in a death spiral economically. And while I am not pleased that Republicans decided to draw their line on the sand on one issue, nationalized health care, as opposed to the most basic issue, which is that we are the most indebted nation on earth, and the ultimate consequence will be bankruptcy and anarchy. And it's disappointing that they could not tell the truth or put their backs, bow their backs based upon the truth. But the fact is that the media, being liberal, has chosen to side with the president and blame Congress. After House Republicans floated a late offer to break the logjam, Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid rejected the idea. He didn't reject the idea because the compromise wasn't justifiable, no. No, he rejected the idea on political platitudes. He said the Democrats would never enter into formal negotiations on spending, quote, with a gun to our head. Stunning, huh? Yes, Democrats, you elected Harry Reid, who is unwilling to perform the job of a senator and prefers platitudes to constructiveness. In the hours leading up to the deadline, the Democratic-controlled Senate repeatedly stripped measures passed by the House that tied temporary funding to for government operations to delaying or scaling back the Affordable Care Act, which was a lie in every aspect. It isn't affordable. It will increase government spending on health care by about 20%. In the time that it has established new rules for private health care, most of those individuals who were responsible and provided for their own health care have had to substantially cut back on the quality of the policy that they were offered and are spending substantially more for substantially less coverage. The gap that has been caused and the lack of affordability now in healthcare is at an all-time low, all directly related to the Affordable Care Act. Trying to make healthcare free to those who have not and will not pay for it, just like the American 75 million of you who accept food stamps, is the reason that this government is now a cancer, literally feeding cancer into the body of the nation. It is reprehensible. You know, there is a way that the nation could have dealt with health care and made it more affordable. The first thing that you would do is to sharply reduce the litigation against drug companies. You could reduce pharmaceuticals by about 75% simply by reducing the legal ramifications against the producers of those drugs, recognizing that no matter what somebody produces, there's going to be a negative side effect. You know, have the drug company say, this is the potential consequence, but this is the potential benefit. It's your call. If tort reform existed amongst doctors and hospitals, doctor and hospital care could be reduced substantially. That is the primary area where in the general population, the costs have become exacerbated by lawyers. But liberal politicians are heavily supported by by lawyers. And as such, they didn't touch that. In the federal welfare and Medicare system, about 40% of the money is fraud. If you want to reduce the quality of health care, then take it away entirely from government. You know, there was that LA Times sting that was done on recipients of federal funding for health care that the LA Times just monitored license plate numbers and of people who walked in to a particular clinic that billed the state of California for tens of millions of dollars and showed that about 70% of their revenue was fraudulently billed. My mother-in-law died not too long ago. My wife is still dealing with the fraud that is being perpetrated against the government by the facilities that she was in the last months of her life. Double billing, billing for doctor visits that didn't occur. The fraud that exists across the board is gargantuan. And that's the only place where you could potentially save money. But beyond that, if you want to offer health care for those unwilling to pay for it, unable to pay for it, then you need to change what you are willing to provide. You know, for example, if somebody needs a replacement organ, sorry. No, that kind of surgery, way too expensive. No one wakes up one day or, you know, immigrates to a country or wakes up as a child one day in a country and say, I'm entitled to that. No, you're not. You know, if you're a smoker and you get cancer, well, you did it to yourself. If you're obese and you get diabetes, sorry, you did it to yourself. There has to be some sort of responsibility, some level of saying, all right, we will have government health care facilities. And, you know, you break your arm, we'll fix it. You get an infection, we'll give you antibiotics. You need a heart bypass? Sorry. You need chemotherapy? Sorry. No. Somewhere along the way, you've got to say that if we do that, then the only way we can do that is to rob those who are productive, killing the economy, being grotesquely immoral. But that's not the mentality of our government, or for the most part, the American people. So shortly after midnight, when Obama realized that Harry Reid had operated as the good little robot that he had instructed, he tweeted, "The Affordable Care Act is moving forward. You can't shut it down." That was all the president cared about. Obamacare. It's not ready for prime time. It isn't a good move in the sense of reducing health care costs. It increases them dramatically. It's amongst the most debilitating and flawed bits of legislation ever proposed. But that's all he cares about. And yet he'll blame Congress. The political dysfunction at the Capitol also raised fresh concerns about whether Congress can meet a crucial mid-October deadline to raise the government's debt ceiling from nearly $17 trillion. Congress, again, the media wants to blame. Why should we raise the debt ceiling? Why don't we just demand that the government doesn't spend more money than it takes in? Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We are just 2 weeks away from the second pillar of this collapsing government that will fall. That is the debt ceiling. In this particular case, while the government's debt ceiling is stated to be $16.7 trillion, the Obama administration has played a lot of games. There's over $300 billion worth of interdepartment borrowing that has enabled them to continue to exceed that number. It's also part of the smoke and mirrors that have created the illusion that this year's deficit is smaller than last year's deficit. The reality is that by not expand or not exceeding, increasing the debt ceiling, you will have a treasury default. There are lots of mechanisms that clandestinely the U.S. Treasury can deploy to avoid the consequence of that. But it would certainly send ripples through the world. In a Reuters poll, about 25% of Americans blame Republicans for the shutdown, 14% blame Obama, 5% blame Democrats, 44% said everyone should be blamed. You know, everyone said that the sky would fall when the sequester cuts were imposed. It was approximately $250 billion worth of cuts, mainly to defense. And, you know, it was just presented as just the darkest, direst, most horrible thing that could possibly happen, that you'd be just destroying the ability of the federal government to perform. It was the most dire thing you could imagine. Nothing. Well, it did was it did reduce the size of this year's deficit by $250 billion. And, of course, there is a one-time benefit when you raise tax of particularly because the fiscal year and the annual year taxes are raised based upon a calendar year where the government runs on a fiscal year. And so when you are going to raise taxes as much as the U.S. government raised them, then those who have earned profits, particularly in long-term capital gains, take the profits at the end of the year, which is still in the fiscal year that goes forward. And there was so much profit taking because no one wanted to take the profits with the higher taxes that you do get a one-time spike in government revenues. But it is a short-term benefit because soon that tax increase, when it takes effect, actually decreases overall revenues. So as we study this, we realize that depending on who you're listening to, it could be anywhere from 700,000 to a million employees that are going to be furloughed. The estimate is that it's around 400,000 to 500,000 Department of Defense employees. It's approximately 40% of the Department of Defense civilian employees. I've shared with you many times before, and I will share it again. I know that it's a radical concept, but it is Jeffersonian to its core. Jefferson would be the first to applaud this. In fact, he was. We should eliminate the Department of Defense. Not decrease it by 5 or 10 or 15%. We should just eliminate it. Jefferson knew that if Americans had the right to keep and bear arms, that it would be impossible for any nation to infringe on the nation's freedom, and that without a standing army and a constant state of war, that the people would be vastly freer than they would be under the conditions that we're in now. And he said that by having a military in this regard, that the federal government would become ever more powerful, that it would use all forms of propaganda, that great fraud would take place, that taxes would grow up, robbing the people of their earnings, and that great debts would occur, robbing future generations of their freedom. All of the reasons that Jefferson was opposed to a national military are the reasons that we need to bring ours to fruition. All you have to do is honor the Second Amendment, and American independence is assured. No one can invade this country and occupy it. You could save, therefore, about 25% of government expenditures, and you could keep your government from being suicidal, from invading countries like Afghanistan and Iraq, or even thinking about bombing countries like Syria and making bad situations worse. We will speak about the other employees that are furloughed today and how it will make absolutely no difference. I'm Yada. This is Shattering Myths. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. Yes, today 400,000 to 500,000 civilian employees for the Department of Defense are being furloughed. They're almost universally overpaid. My son was offered one such job. He was they would have paid him almost twice what he is making now as an engineer designing jet engines to work to rehab the Navy's nuclear power plants for carriers. But it's how we do things. The U.S. Navy recognizes there's no one in the Navy that can actually do this work. So they hire engineers in the private sector, and they recognize, too, that they do a lousy job as a government agency of even procuring talent. So they have companies like Booz Allen, for example, hire them. They pay Booz Allen a very substantial fee for doing so. They overpay the workers because they don't want them to be employees. They want, in other words, all the benefits that they're demanding that actual private label, private industry employers have to provide to their employees. They don't want any of those standards applied to them, so they just want independent contractors who hired on 1 year stints so that they don't accrue any benefits. And that's how the government operates. It's why it spends so much money. It's why they're we're bankrupt. There'd be 40,000 commerce Department of Commerce employees laid off. These aren't people that produce anything of commerce. They are just the regulators. 13,000 in the Department of Energy. These are not individuals that produce energy. They're probably spend more time preventing energy from being developed than actually producing anything. 19,000 in the Transportation Department. Again, not providing transportation, but thwarting transportation. Health, Education, and Welfare, about 10,000 employees, although the welfare checks will continue to go out. Now, they're just going to close national parks, museums, and national zoos. The NSA, oh, that'll keep on operating because we need to spy on the Americans who are willing to expose and condemn the government. The air traffic controllers, they will continue to operate. You will find all military operations continuing as normal. So if you're in the military, you will be paid and you will be conducting your normal wasteful endeavors. The Federal Reserve, of course, is not effective. Department of Homeland Security, which keeps the people in line, is not effective. Justice is not effective. This year, so that you know, through August, the government had spent $750 billion more than it had taken in. That's even after the bump in December in revenues that were directly a result of people, individuals who had long-term capital gains, taking their gains and at the lower rates rather than having to pay at the higher rates. And therefore, the government got a $200 billion boost in revenue as a result, well, a one-time effect, and $250 billion in sequester cuts. We're expecting the deficit this year to be just shy of $900 billion. If you were to break down the government spending, defense is about 24%. The Medicaid, Medicare is 22%. It's the fastest growing. Pensions and Social Security, 22%. Welfare is 12%. And interest is 6% of government spending. Can you imagine what's going to happen when the shell game that the Fed has played with quantitative easing, where it has been the principal bond buyers with mythical funds, when the shell game is over, when they've inflated the currency beyond repair, and they actually have to sell bonds, what the interest rate will have to be. And when the interest rates go to 10% and we've reached $20 trillion in debt and we're adding $2 trillion in debt to the deficit every year just on interest payments in addition to the $1 trillion of debt that currently exists as part of just overspending on the military, on health care, and on Social Security. And then we're adding $3 trillion of debt a year. And it's worse than that because from an actuarial point of view, we're about to have the largest change in society in terms of numbers of people going on Social Security and Medicare and out of the workforce, which in a Ponzi scheme set up like Medicare and Social Security are, is disastrous. The estimates now are that shortly, just health care alone is going to be 14% of total gross domestic product. Beyond comprehensible. That would mean at the present budget levels that health care would be larger than the entire budget is presently.
I think the big thing that always gets me is that when they point at other countries that have the health care plan that we're going on, mm-hmm. they always point to like Canada and Israel. And those two countries have significantly less people than us. It'd be a lot different if there's only 7.9 million of us that we have to provide health care to.
Or you're dealing with a country that doesn't have so many unproductive immigrants. Or a country on with such an aggressive welfare system.
Yeah, look at Israel, the case of Israel. Everybody in Israel, they have to serve 2 years in the military.
Yeah.
They have to. That's a requirement. So they're actually working to gain that health care. They're doing something to gain that health care.
Yeah. We have a wholly broken system. And I went over the healthcare scenario and said, you know, if you want to provide a foundation of healthcare so that if somebody breaks an arm and they can't afford to have their break cast, then you provide that on a federal center. And if a community is too small to have a federal center, then a stipend goes to the hospital in the local community that fixed someone's broken arm. If somebody needs antibiotics, you provide the antibiotics. But in terms of the kind of extravagant health care that we did not work out of our Medicaid and Medicare program, those kinds of options are not available in places like Canada. You know, in Canada, if you need a heart bypass, you're not going to get it on the government. If you need a replacement organ, you're not going to get it on the government. And so if you're going to offer those level of services, then you need to pare them down. It's the same thing with welfare. Rather than handing out money and with food stamps, you know, make government housing available. With that housing, everybody who takes advantage of the housing has to contribute. You're either going to perform a daycare service, or you're going to perform a maintenance service, or you're going to perform a food preparation service, but that you're going to make a contribution to your housing. This idea of just redistributing money destroys both sides of the equation. It causes those who are productive to be less productive, and it causes those who are unproductive to be dependent. It is a disastrous plan.
Even here, if you break your arm and you walk into a hospital, they're going to fix your arm. This is me speaking from experience. When I broke my arm in three places, and I didn't have insurance at that time. And they went in, they gave me surgery to fix my arm. They did it. Granted, I paid for it all, but they're not going to deny you to fix your arm. They can't do that. Their Hippocratic oath won't allow them to do that.
Yep. But you know, if your problem was that you had cancer because you smoked too many cigarettes, they would not be obligated to provide the chemotherapy. And they ought not be, but they should. So there's a level of just, we're going to be civil as a nation, and we're going to do certain things, and then a level of, you know, you really ought to be responsible. And if we steal too much from those who are productive and redistribute too much to those who are not, then what we're going to create is a nation of dependence that on a nation that itself is nothing but a hollow shell. And that's what we have created. And so this issue on the deficit, on government spending, ought to be frank and honest with America as to how big our problem is, that we are by far the largest debtor nation. And the demographics in America are such that over the next 10 years, the consequence to this country are catastrophic, because America's largest debt is not recorded. It's the unfunded mandates of Social Security and Medicare, and they total more than $45 trillion. Now, let's just say that for Social Security, which is the second biggest spending item on the federal government, let's say that you individually decided that you wanted to provide for your retirement. So you work out a deal with your employee that they take 7.5% of your income, and they put it into a bank account that you control, and you take 7.5% of your income for 15% of your total income, and you both put it into a bank account that you control. And each year in that bank account, you decide that, you know, there's other people that have really nice boats, so I want the biggest and best boat. And you use that bank account to buy a really nice boat. You say, you know, other people don't have to stand in lines at airports, and they have nice planes, so I'm going to buy a nice plane with the money that is in that bank account. And, you know, there's other people that enjoy health care, and they go to really fancy spas, so I'm going to fund twice a year a trip to the most expensive spa. And, you know, there's other people that have really nice clothes, nicer clothes than I do, so I'm going to use that account to buy myself a really smashing wardrobe with all of the appropriate bling. And you get to the time that you're ready to retire, and you say, now I want the money that was put in by the employee and the employer into my retirement account. But you find, no, you spent it all. You squandered it all. Well, that's exactly what's happened to all of those who receive Social Security now and say, wait a minute, I contributed to my own Social Security. I want my money back. No, you voted for the politicians who spent it on really big boats, really big airplanes, and really fancy health care. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're talking about the federal budget. Most people don't recognize that one out of every $4 that is part of the gross domestic product of the United States is now federal spending. One out of every $4. You know, the American gross domestic product is between $15 and $16 trillion. The federal budget is $3.8 trillion. That's 24%. So, very close to a quarter of the U.S. economy is the federal government. That's how out of whack we have gotten ourselves. And can we afford that? Of course not. It's absurd. We have Glenn on the phone calling in from Philadelphia as a comment on Obamacare. Hi, Glenn. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, Scott just said something about the Hippocratic Oath. I don't believe that's been utilized for a number of years now as a mandatory thing. Just as in nursing, we have the similar, very similar Nightingale Pledge, which I do not believe is practiced anymore. But about Obamacare, the thing about Obamacare, you guys all make good points, but I think another overarching point related to it, this is a huge piece of legislation crafted by, like, pharmaceutical and insurance companies, you know, rather than the legislators themselves. I doubt that many other legislators themselves have read it. I know I have not, but I keep hearing about these various provisions in there that pop up, such as the government paying people to divorce and paying them more if they divorce after age 65, 60 or whatever. Crazy things in there.
Yeah. And I can assure you that the insurance industry did not sponsor the Affordable Care Act. Most of the insurance, the large insurance companies, actually have divestiture teams in place who, over the next 5 years, are trying to determine how those companies can survive post-Obamacare. And most of them have chosen that they realize that the only way that they can actually survive is to generate revenues outside of the healthcare industry. Obamacare is not survivable for the healthcare industry as it currently exists. I can tell you that for the farm that we run in the East, where we are responsible for providing, we're not required. We do it because we thought it would be a good thing to do for our employees. We provide our employees with healthcare, and I can tell you that over the last 2 years, we've had to radically reduce the level of coverage, and we're paying substantially more. And our experience is consistent with with America at large, that Obamacare has been an absolute disaster for private health care people. And what the government's trying to do the same thing it does on everything else. It is trying to run the free enterprise system off the table so that government becomes the only option, and then no one can complain the fact that government is inefficient because there's no other choice. And that's their scheme. They're doing it with Obamacare. Obamacare is an absolute absolutely disastrous plan that every aspect of it, when Obama said these are the benefits, every benefit turned out to be untrue. And it's going to be an absolute, utter, and unmitigated disaster. So at least the Republicans are right in saying that we ought not fund it. But, you know, unfortunately, it's only one of a thousand gargantuan mistakes we'd have to correct to save this country.
I just received my open enrollment notification that's occurring this month, and I'm already aware. I mean, I personally may not even keep my PPO, you know, type insurance, yes, depending if the premiums double or triple. I have to take a look at some of that stuff.
Yep.
One thing, well, I have gotten precious little use out of the personal, tax-exempt health savings account for that money that I put aside in previous years. But this may be a good year to max that out and save, you know, and have that available to be spent tax-free.
When you mentioned taxes, the big misnomer about Obamacare is it does raise taxes in 13 different ways. And some of those taxes are extraordinarily counterproductive. You know, there's a tax on doctors, which means they have to increase their billings just to break even. There's a tax, a hefty tax on prosthetics. So if you need a replacement knee or a replacement hip, there is an exorbitant fee, an excise tax being placed on those devices by the federal government. The federal government decided that one way that they could make the illusion that that healthcare was going down in cost was to reduce the percentage of the actual cost of performing services that they reimburse hospitals and doctors for. And all that does is requires them to either go out of business or to charge more for their non-government services, which is the reason that the PPO programs and private health care costs are skyrocketing. We have economic ignoramuses that are running this country as senators and congressmen and as presidents, and they have all but destroyed the United States.